Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
This is not a snake advice podcast. In case you accidentally tune in for snake advice, you're in the wrong place.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
Every proposition has within it contradictory elements. Every thesis has an antithesis right in it.
With Margaret Abels
and Amy Wilson.
His black and white thinking drives me insane and makes me want to put him in on the lawn with a free child sign attached to his head.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And today we're going to talk about how two things can be true at the same time.
This is not two kinds of people. This is not two is better than one. This is two things can be true at the same time.
This is like the opposite. We spend so much time on this podcast doing the very important work of deciding who's the monster.
Yes.
Right? Who's the bad person? Who's the good person? And the good person is whoever's listening to this podcast right now. But this is, I've been working on this. I've been finding this very useful. And so I thought it would be good to do an episode on like what this means and how you can apply it to your relationship and to your parenting and sort of, you know, change, make your life a little more conflict free or at least conflict aware.
Yeah. And it fits into so many categories. It fits into spouses, which we talk a lot about. It fits into relationships with our children, and let's just say maybe some of our teenagers who we're having this problem with. I feel like this is my Achilles heel, my kryptonite. You've kind of tried to talk me off this ledge, but it's difficult. I am a person who cannot rest until someone has heard me and agreed that they are wrong and I am right. It just plagues me.
And I think for me, it's a little bit different. I mean, certainly that, but sometimes it's also, we can't stop arguing until you see, not that you're wrong, but that I'm right and a good person, right? Like, not that like you must slink away in shame, but you must say like, okay, I see you. I see you and you're a good person. Like we have to keep the argument going until I make you understand I'm not the monster.
Yeah. And I want you to see that you're a bad person, which means you're probably a better person than I am. But I'm like, no. I can't rest. I mean, I can think of one person right now, and it's the 4 a.m. plague that we walked away from our relationship, and they think that they were a good person in my life and that I was an ingrate. And I'm like, I resist the urge to get up at 4 a.m. and write an email that's like, you were a bad person and I didn't appreciate you. Why? Because you were bad.
Yeah. It's taken me a long time to figure this out, that you can have somebody out there who has a different point of view on something. And that is the conclusion, that two things can be true. But I'm telling you, it helps. It helps sometimes. It helps kind of.
It's, goodness knows I need the help, Amy.
And again, it's like, it's my favorite thing. We're not saying do this so that you're a better person. We're saying do this because it'll help you be happier.
Sleep at night?
Yeah, sleep at night. Have a better Tuesday afternoon.
I could use a little more rest at 4 a.m. rather than fighting with my nemesis who only exists in my brain.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, then this is for you.
This person has no idea they're my nemesis. None.
This episode is for you, Ben. I'm so glad you're here.
Yes.
All right.
I'm going to do a whole other 12-part podcast called Me and My Nemesis.
So in a disagreement, two things can feel like opposites, but they can affect both be true, right? So examples, I came up with a couple examples here for everybody. I'm angry at you for how you spoke to me, and you're angry at me that I'm not listening to you. Those, like, you're both mad and you're both right. Like, you can both be mad about the thing you're mad about.
Yeah, this is me and my teenager 24 hours a day.
You're mad that I won't let you go to the party and you're not going to the party. Like, those two things can definitely both be true.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
and the art, and you,
they seem very close together.
Right. Well, the argument doesn't have to keep going until either you talk me into letting you go to the party or I talk you into not being mad that I won't let you go to the party. Those are two things that can both be true. They're not even opposites. They're just sort of like, they're in conflict.
They're parallel lines. Yeah.
It's maybe something that doesn't have to be solved. Yes. Yes. There are things. So when you're in this thing, right, each party in this disagreement thinks you're right and the other person's wrong. And, you know, we want to get past that. Would you like to hear about why this is? Because, of course, I've done the research.
Yes, I think I do want to hear about why this is.
There's reasons that this occurs. Okay, so we talk sometimes in the show about how the human brain loves narrative, loves an explanation, right? And so beware of the story you tell yourself because it's just that thing your brain does. Your brain loves a story. And when it doesn't know the story, it'll make one up that seems like it makes sense. And then it'll collect information that fits that narrative. So this is kind of like a corollary to that, which is that the human brain categorizes. It also loves categorizes. This is this kind of thing. This is that kind of thing. That as we walk around the world, our brain puts everything into categories so that we can, you know, survive. This is a safe berry. This isn't. Berries that look like this are safe. You know, animals that look like that aren't. Snakes that have yellow on them. What's the snake thing? It's like, if it's yellow, it's a great fellow. But if it, this is wrong, don't live by this. It's like, if it's red, you're definitely dead. Like there's a snake rule, right?
This is not a snake advice podcast. In case you accidentally tune in for snake advice, you're in the wrong place. I could, now, if my 13-year-old was available, we would know everything possible to know about snakes, but he's not here right now.
Yeah. But like, it's a category, right? They walk around like that's a good kind of wave and that's a riptide, whatever. Like we categorize things as we go. And so then we have a tendency to over dichotomize things.
Over dichotomize, do we? Yes. I mean, agree. And that teams, right? That like we are on this team or that team and that there are signifiers to our team that are important. And then we kind of lose sight of what team we're on. And suddenly we're like, wait a minute. I was just studying fascism last night with one of my children. And it's very interesting, like how nationalism throughout history, the idea that like national pride and identifying as a part of a nation plays a tremendous role in like societal stability. That like when we identify and that a lot of rebellions and unification movements fail because that sense of nationalism is missing. So for example, if you were trying to unify the United States and we were originally all the different countries, like if we identify so strongly as New Yorkers that we don't identify as members of the United States, like you can't unify a country if people feel too strongly about their local identities. You need a national identity, which helps bring people together. But then nationalism quite quickly tips into like fascism and craziness, you know, and
we're right and everybody else is bad.
Yeah. Now. Like it goes, nationalism tends to go badly at a certain point, but it is also very necessary to form people together in positive ways. So all of these things are double-sided, right? Like the ability to identify and be on teams has a lot of positives and then quickly tips into like genocide. And you're like, wait a minute, what happened? We were just at like, we're all gonna agree on something.
It's like this lizard brain thing that when you're right, you're safe. And when you're wrong, you're in danger, right?
And when your group is right together,
then you're really safe.
Right. But then, and like when you're leader, I mean, this is the thing of like, oh, I would never join a cult. It's like, well, you're part of some cultish things, right? We're going to talk to Amanda Montell on the podcast. You wrote that book, Cultish. Cannot wait. We're like what we live for. But, and then, you know, strong leaders tend to come along and be like, not only are we part of this group, but these other people are trying to ruin our group. And this kind of thinking is so human. And I don't think we do it, but we all do.
We all do it. There's a psychological term for it. It's called dialectic. I mean, I've heard the word dialectic a lot. I wasn't sure exact. Guess what it means? It means two things can be true. Like, that's literally what it means. It's
dia, two. lectic, something else.
Lectic is talking about something, I think. Two things can be true. That's what it is.
Dialogue is two people talking.
There you go. So this, so it's really all it means is this idea. And it's been around since, like, you know, people were in togas talking about this. But Hegel, who was a philosopher in the early 1800s, he, I guess, is who really that this idea has been, he brought it into a modern thinking. So he talked about this dialectic, and he said that every thesis, every statement, like, I don't have a good example, so I'm going to watch me crash and burn here, but like every statement, like March is never nice. It's always rainy and cold in March still, has within it an antithesis, except the years where it's not, where it's actually sunny and warm, or it snows or whatever.
You came up with a good example.
Every proposition has within it contradictory elements. Every thesis has an antithesis right in it. And when you consider both the thing and the opposite thing that can also be true, that's when you reach synthesis. And that's what you're going for. Like, when you consider this and this, then the third thing is created, and that's synthesis, and that's usually what's right, I guess.
There used to be a card game. Tell me if you remember it. I feel you will. It was black and white, I feel like. And it was just questions in a box. And you would ask the questions, and they were like, they made you think. It was like a discussion kind of a game. I'm going to say this was late 80s, 90s. I'm going to look it up during the break.
I don't remember this game. Okay.
It wasn't called Dilemmas. It was something like that, though. One of them was, would you have an invention that will change the world for the better in a lot of ways, but it will kill, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people.
Is it a nuclear bomb?
Would you invent this thing?
What is a nuclear bomb?
And it was yeah. Like, we were like, of course not. Like, why would you have blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, it turns out it's the car, right? Like, it changes everything about how you do everything, but it kills thousands of people a year. And that's right. That's the thesis and the antithesis. Like, a car is a good invention, and it kills thousands of people a year. So you got to be able to think both of those things at the same time. Like, there is no such thing as, would you want this invention, because you're thinking it's a bomb, right? Like, well, we don't need bombs, we need hugs. Like, no, we need cars, but also there's huge downsides to them in that they're possibly murdering the planet and they're killing a lot of people.
So that's it. Like, they right, that, and you don't really understand what a car is until you've synthesized the good things about it and the bad things about it. When you've put all of that together, that's how you really come to an understanding.
Yeah. And I will say, I have a child who struggles with what we call black and white thinking. And
he likes it. Struggles in that it's awesome. And that's how he likes to do things.
Struggles in that his black and white thinking drives me insane and makes me want to put him in on the lawn with a free child sign attached to his head.
Understand. Uh-huh.
That, like, everything is, this is going to be terrible, or this, you know, he just struggles a lot in that area. And it makes me crazy. And we end up in dialogues where I'm like, it's not true. Like, you know, my life is literally this child. We were recently on vacation at a very well-known theme park that is expensive and extremely fun. And it started raining, and this child loudly announced, there is no God. I was like,
because I'm at the park and it's raining. Talk about thesis and antithesis. Right. And we have to go home now.
Because like three drops of rain meant that everything was completely ruined. And I just was like, and we were able to laugh about it later in the day. That, like, do we need to go from, like, it's either drizzling and there is no God, or like we can carve out a pretty fun day. Like, there's a whole world between these two ideas, but this child does not excel in being able to hold these ideas simultaneously.
You have to start with the acceptance, right? The acceptance that it's raining on my dream vacation. And then this like third thing can be created. This is what I like about this. Like, you're on your way to something better. And we're going to talk about it in the next part when we talk about our relationships. This is not about, like, just don't let it bother you. Like, so what do you have a disagreement?
Well, that's where I end up.
Like, who cares? It doesn't matter. Maybe you just shouldn't let it bother you. It's not really about that. It's about getting to this, like, we're on our vacation and it's raining. So then this two things can be true. And then there's this third thing, which is we're going to go into, I don't know, the Hall of Presidents because it's raining, and it ends up being your kid's favorite thing you did that day. change is possible when you accept the two things. I mean, I'm still like grappling with this idea, but let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about how you can apply this like in fights with your partner, because I think it's very helpful.
Perfect. And just before we break, I have to tell you that I barely listened to anything you said in the last 2 minutes because I was Googling scruples is the name of the game. Scruples. All right, we'll come right back.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order. Okay, so two things can be true, and for me, and probably for a lot of people, it's with my partner, with my spouse, where this is the most challenging and potentially the most useful.
Hit me.
We'll start with how this plays out. Right. So you're in a disagreement and you're both mad. Like, you're both like, well, you didn't tell me that you were going to the, you didn't tell me you're going out to dinner, and now I've made dinner already and you never tell me, you just make plans. Let's say I'm mad about that. And let's say,
Amy,
I
could tell by the way you delivered that that's not it.
It's something that definitely could happen. Let's put it that way. And then your partner is like, I do everything right most of the time. Like, why are you so hard on me on little things? Okay. You're both mad about those things. And I, in this situation, I'm like, I have to stay mad until you realize this is a big deal and I'm sorry. And the other person on the other side is like, I have to push back and make you realize that things aren't as big a deal as you make them sometimes. That is the perfect situation where, like, both of you could be right. Like, maybe I do overthink things sometimes, and maybe my partner does need to give me more of a heads up and more consideration when plans change. Both of those things can be true, but when you're stuck in it, you're mad, you feel right, because you are right. But you feel like if you try to see things from their perspective, it means you change into being wrong.
Well, right. That's the key. And I mean, I think this is really true with like resentments and grudges, right? That like I've devoted, 10 years of my life to hating my ex who cheated on me. And then if I ever smile at him at a party, it's like I've undone 10 years of hard work of making him know how bad he is as a person. And it is the classic, like, drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. Like, it doesn't actually work, but it is, I think, when we talk about, like, place of maximum generosity, it plays into the fallacy that you can convince my best friend gave me this advice 30 years ago, and I've said it on the podcast before, that I was talking about this boss that I had who was like good looking and young. It was like an internet startup. He was like that guy, you know, like the happening New York, like Mr. Big from Sex and the City type of guy, although like younger. And he was so awful. And to me, he was just a terrible person. And I would just lay in bed at night thinking about how terrible he was. And he was just like a finger gunny, like everybody's favorite guy. And it just ate me with acid that people thought he was good when I knew he was bad. And my best friend at some point after, I'm sure, like our 90th trip to the bar, where I was like, and then he did this and he's this and he's such a phony. And she was like, it's not your job to convince people that they're jerks. She did not use the word jerks. And it's not your job even to convince other people that certain people are jerks. You can just know that they're a jerk and then go about your life. And I was like, wait, this is a radical idea. How could this possibly exist? And it's still not something I'm good at. Like it drives me crazy when people, I have a righteous anger towards people who I think need to be shown up for their wrongness.
But it's a whole other thing. When it's like that dude at the bar, he's annoying, right? That's one thing. But when it's the person you live with and the person you're building a relationship with.
Or your boss, like who does have like an all day, every day, like determination of your existence.
Right. I think there's a slight difference between like that thing is not your problem from like this definitely is your problem and you have a right to be mad about it. And we're not saying like just try not being mad about it. We're not saying that. We're saying that like this is a situation you have to resolve. And you can either fight until you don't feel like fighting anymore and then stay mad for two more weeks and then, you know, reach a sort of detente where you forget what it was you were mad about. Or maybe in this moment, you can be like, I hear what you're saying, but you understand that I feel, you know what I mean? Like you can be the one to be like, I see what you're saying here.
I think there's two different things. I think there's one element, which I'm talking about, which is this can't be fixed, which is like, you see yourself as phenomenal. I hate you. This can't be fixed. Like, I'm never going to convince you that you're terrible. We don't get along. We have to figure out how to, like, coexist in a space.
That might be, like, with an in-law, right?
I was going to say, this is a classic example of people with their in-laws.
Your annoying brother, whatever. Yeah.
There's a second example, which is that we have a great deal of respect and love between the two of us, but we see certain things from very different lenses, and we have to figure out mutual ground that we can exist on. And so example one, and I think that they're both valid to the conversation, like example one might be an in-law who you didn't choose. We're not talking about our own in-laws, who we've said many times that we love and respect, but
present company excluded.
Maybe there's an in-law who like you didn't choose, you don't like their personality, but you have to spend time with them. They're a member of your family. They're not toxic. They're not like, okay, we got to go no contact so they stop ruining our lives. They're just an annoyance. So that's one version of their truth and your truth can still be true and you can just exist side by side. But the truths that are like your child or your husband or your spouse or someone or you and I, like a relationship where you're really trying to make it work, that takes probably a little bit more work than like I'm going to ignore my in-laws' helpful suggestions, even though they drive me crazy. And at night when I get in bed with my husband, I'm going to be like, oh my God, that drove me crazy.
Right. This is a little bit different, I think, from like, we don't talk about foreign affairs because we're just never going to agree. And that's okay. Like, I don't need to. It's easier to sometimes to change the mind of your taxi driver than it is, you know, your cousin. So leaving that aside, this is like you got, yeah, this is a conflict that you're in and it's affecting you and you have to do something about it. And it's not as easy as like leave the room when the election comes up, right? This is like, I have to fix this. That there is this, it's a third way process. That's not my term. It's a therapeutic term. And that is instead of like, we stay in this until you're right, you admit that I'm right, or I admit that you're right, or we just like run out of steam, that there is this third way where you start with acknowledging the validity of the other person's position, which is at best, at least very disarming, right? Like if I'm like, You never tell me when you just make plans and you don't tell me. It's like, why do you make such a big deal about it? I'm like, you're right. I am angry about it. You're right. It really upsets me. And I should think about, you know, why that is, because I could just put this food away. But I am. I'm feeling angry about it. Like, that's very different than because you're so inconsiderate and you always have been, right? Instead of like, let me show you how more right I am to come at it, to try to see it from the other person's point of view. And it doesn't mean that makes you wrong.
I also think that this can be valid in both of the examples that we're talking about. I was just talking with an old friend who I was catching up with about a situation that, like, we haven't talked in 10 years, and she had a very high conflict relationship with one of her family members. And I picked up with, like, oh, how's it going? And it was pretty much the same stuff was going on. Now it was lawsuits. I mean, it had gotten escalated and gotten really, really difficult. And we were talking about the dropping the rope concept. Like, is there a point at which you give in, and like, can you maintain your own truths while giving in and walking away to stop the tug of war, basically? And I think that in conflict situations, more like the in-law situation, that it is, I mean, the psychologists say this all the time, there's a line of books about it. It's a dance of conflict, right? And that this disarming and this way of saying, like, you know what? You're right. I am holding on to some things that are difficult for me for a host of different reasons. It is a form of dropping the rope to say, I do have a role in this and I will look at it. And it helps, I think, everybody in the situation maybe put their guns down a little bit.
Yeah. It occurred to me as you were saying that, it's not saying, okay, I won't be angry. It's saying, you're right, I am angry. It is really triggering me, isn't it? I mean, I can tell. You know, it's not denying your feelings. It's owning them.
Yeah. And I just was having this situation with my kids this morning, trying to get out. We were traveling, so we're a little bit jet lagged, and like, trying to get out in the morning is difficult. And I had just been doing an interview yesterday about kind of like meeting your kids where they are. And I was like, I'm very understanding of this, knowing the reasons. And I was like, totally in that mode. And then, you know, we woke up at 6:45 to get out the door at 7:45. And I was like, I know it's hard because we're super tired. We're all jet lagged. Like, I was meeting them in the space. I was doing all the good work, Amy. And then by the last 5 minutes, I was just screaming my head off and being like, we have to go, you know? And I do think that I was trying to say, guys, I want to operate from this calmer space, but the closer we get to the deadline, the more kind of shrill I get, and trying to say, because then it always ends up with, oh, you're always yelling. I'm like, no. For 45 minutes, I really was not yelling. I was being very loving. I listened to an interview yesterday and I was trying that. But at a certain point, and possibly it's because historically, like, I haven't done it that way. And I get that there's a lot of reasons behind it. But I do think that when you start with, here's why this is hard for me, here's what I'm bringing to it, here's what I'm hearing, it can be helpful.
I mean, and maybe not when you're 5 minutes late for school, right? Like, I think that there is, I don't want it to sound like, and then you have to always, I know exactly what you mean, to be like, but I didn't yell for 15 minutes and then I yelled. It's like, wah, 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 all the way back down to zero for you. And it doesn't matter that you did the other good stuff first. Yes, it does. And there are times when this, you know, gentle parenting, I'm open to hearing what you're saying, and there are two ways to do this. And like, there's times when you're going to be more available for this than others, maybe. But
yeah,
part of this dialectic thing that I'd always heard, and I never really knew what it was. I just knew it was like a term that psychologists used, is this DBT. So there's dialectical behavioral therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy is like, if you're afraid of flying, we're going to, like, it's sort of exposure therapy. Let's talk about it, right? Let's do the things, let's expose you to it to change your behavior. And dialectical behavior therapy, I never really understood what it was. I still don't. I mean, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
Or a snake expert.
Let me just re-underline that. But it is the dialect, the D in DBT stands for this, like, two things can be true thing. Like, that's at the center of it. And one of the most basic things that they have you do in this kind of work is not use the word but anymore, to use the word and. For example, like, my spouse is mad at me that sometimes I forget to tell them that I have a work dinner, but it's not like I'm a bad guy, you know? And then just like, can you just replace that but with, and my spouse is mad, you know, that I'm sometimes not around for dinner and I forgot to tell them, and I'm not a bad guy. Like, that it just starts to change your wiring of, like, two things can be true. You aren't a bad guy, and you were maybe inconsiderate in this one moment. Those are not contradictory. They only felt like they were.
This is like Dr. Becky, who we've had on the podcast and hosts Good Inside. It's the idea that like seeing children as essentially good, like what is getting in the way of you being good, like changing your starting point, I think. And man, I think this is where we get in a lot of trouble with like parents and in-laws. And we talked about this on the Mom Blame episode, like starting, when you start with a thesis, like my mother is overly involved and constantly harping on me. Like there's nowhere to go in that dialogue, basically. And it's not that it's not one of the truths, but also like my mother might also have dedicated her whole life to making sure that I was happy and well cared for. And even starting with the idea that there can be multiple truths, I think frees us up in ways that we don't always imagine.
All right. I was going to talk about Dr. Becky too. Let's talk about her and kids and how we apply this to parenting after this.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
And now, who do you love more, your husband or your sister?
From the What Fresh Hell podcast.
Your sister
listens in rapt attention to all your stories and asks pertinent follow-up questions.
Your husband
cannot even remember why your friend Stacy cannot stand your coworker's boyfriend Joel.
Verdict?
Sister, all the way.
Your husband
occasionally brings you snacks in bed.
Your sister
often still doesn't speak to you for several days because she remembers a blouse of hers you ruined in the seventh grade.
Verdict?
Your husband.
Your sister
notices every detail of your life and can tell at a single glance when something's bothering you.
Your husband
failed to notice that you painted the living room a different color last week.
Verdict?
Sister.
Your husband
is the man who has chosen to walk by your side all the days of your life.
Your sister
has incriminating photos of your hairstyles from the 1990s.
Verdict?
Okay, this game is not fun anymore. Can it be a tie?
Your husband
is willing to listen to your complaints about your sister.
Your sister
is willing to listen to your complaints about your husband.
Verdict?
Tie. Yeah, no, we're definitely going with tie.
This has been Who Do You Love More, Your Husband or Your Sister?
From the What Fresh Hell podcast.
So
So before the break, you were talking about Dr. Becky Kennedy, who I did think of because I knew that I had along the way maybe heard her say this. So she did this Instagram post. I'll put the link in the show notes where she brought up this two things are true, she called it, and how you apply it to your children, how you can push back with firmness and connection at the same time. Like she's kind of saying you can be two things at once, firm and connected, when you give your kids this response of two things can be true. And it's basically, I'm using one of her examples here, iPad time is over. And it totally makes sense you feel upset about it because when I put my screens down, it's hard for me too. That's giving them the two things can be true. And she goes back, she does it for like, here's how you do this with a toddler. Here's how you do it with a teenager. But two things can be true. You validate, you state your boundary, you validate their reaction to that boundary. You understand that they're upset that you're not letting them go to the party where there won't be any parents. You understand that's upsetting.
Right. And it can work the opposite way, which is I love you and I really need you to leave me alone for the next hour because I'm having a mental problem right now. Like it can definitely be, I feel like this is later stage marriage in a good way for me. Like I feel like in the beginning of a relationship, you're very like, I love you and I will show it to you in the correct love language. And, you know, it's the bachelor. Like, I will express my feelings. I will take you on a hot tub ride in a balloon. Like, and that later love is, I love you and I'm really looking forward to being away from you for a week with my girlfriends. Or, I love you and I need you to stop telling me this story because I've either heard it before or it's just essentially boring. Like you can, it works both ways.
This reminds me of Gwenna Lathland, whose Mama Cusses is going to be our Fresh Take guest this week, just two more days. And she talks about responsive parenting. She doesn't see, you'll have to hear more about this in the episode, but she's a gentle parent, but she's like, but I'm not gentle. That doesn't feel like the right, like that's the word for the kind of parenting I ascribe to, but I'm definitely not gentle. So she calls it responsive parenting. And I think it's kind of what all this is about. Like if I take in, oh, I don't know, I take away my kid's iPad because she got a C in a test, right? And she's so mad at me. And you make room for that boundary and her feelings about it instead of, you know, you may not speak to me that way or like you may not slam your door or whatever. It's responding. It's allowing room for those both of those things to exist rather than like shutting it down. And
right.
I'm not so good
it's
at that.
It's okay to be frustrated, but it's not okay.
No, right, exactly.
Or
right.
And, yeah. That's
but,
right.
But her being mad at you is something that you maybe just have to let happen. And it might be there for a day. And you might be mad at her. Like, oh my God, like I told you 18 times if you didn't get that math grade up, the first thing we were going to do is take away the iPad. And then it happens. And now she's mad at you as if you hadn't been extremely clear about that when she was not studying for the math test. I'm making this example up. But like your resentment towards each other doesn't have to be solved first before the disagreement, the vocal disagreement can end.
Right. And this is also something that is a huge practice. And for kids with ADHD, kids on the spectrum, kids with developmental delays, this is an area of weakness a lot of times for kids because the idea that it's my birthday and it's raining and therefore everything's ruined. It's like throwing everything out because of one circumstance and being and trying to work towards the thing of dad's away and that is making you anxious and upset and we can still get through the day and have a decent time. That for a lot of kids, for little kids, for all little kids, that can be really challenging. And for some kids, as they grow up, the two parts of the mind, the two things can be true is actually like blocked in their mind. Does that make sense what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, it does. Or like they come to their first breakup and they might be like, I need to understand why this happened in a way that seems sufficient to me before I can move on, right? Like that's a breakup is the perfect example of two things can be true. You want to be in the relationship, the other person doesn't. And the reason they gave you might not be make sense to you or be sufficient, but it still exists. And that's another one you don't have much of a choice about.
Or even you want to be in the relationship, but you want to break up with the person. Like those two things can be true. And I think that when you get into that very black and white thinking, that heroes and villains, you know, and we say it all the time on the podcast, which is like, change your story, that I do think that the root of human happiness kind of lies in this skill, which is, and I think it's a kind of thinking that I'm very prone to, and that I will start to see people, including my spouse, my siblings, you know, my parents, in-laws, whatever it might happen to be. It's like, heroes or villains, heroes or villains. Like, this person is a good person or a bad person. They're a mean person or they're a good person. Like, that I tend to categorize people. And I think we've talked about it with having a child who's like, this child is a picky eater. This child is my problem child, my difficult child. This child is my good child. Doesn't give me that. All things could be true at once is sort of challenging too. And I think, you know, in our politics these days, we certainly see it where there are complicated stories all around the world that are going on, and that it is hard to boil down heroes and villains in some of these stories, and that nobody is all good white hat team good, and nobody is all bad black hat team terrible, that getting at gray is just hard for us as people. And I think it is the root of conflict, both for, you know, ourselves within our families and ourselves as humans on the global sphere.
And our kids are growing up in an age of a lot of, like, information overload, right? And then also disinformation. And you, like, and again, like, you are right, we are right, and the other people are super, super wrong. Like, they're being fed that every time they open their phones. We're all being fed that. And this is hard work.
For sure. And I do think it's developmentally appropriate. My husband was just kind of calling me out because I tend to be a little bit like, it's time for a lesson. And, you know, this one is saying, oh, I hate this, you know, coach, and they stink, and they're dumb and bad and mean. And I'm like, well, think of it from their point of view, though. Like, they've got a lot of kids who they're trying to play. And it's not always time to see it from everybody's point of view. But I think giving voice constantly to, if I was listening to them describe this situation, what would it sound like? You know, just trying to give voice to ourselves and our kids of, is there another point of view? And don't do this when we're in red brain. Because I know from my husband's point of view, sometimes my husband so is this person. And sometimes I literally have to hold myself back from striking him when he's like, well, but when you think about it, I'm like, no, 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 no. We're right now bashing on that person and supporting me. We are not devil's advocate right now. We are not playing it from, we're not seeing it from their point of view. We're seeing it from my point of view, and they're a dummy and someone needs to go kick their butt for me.
There's two steps, right? The first one is, there are allowed to be two points of view. Like, I think what comes before the, like, well, when you think about it, like, first, like, they are allowed to have a different experience than you. Their feelings are valid. That they have valid feelings doesn't mean your feelings are invalid. There are two different sets of feelings that can both be valid is the first step, right? And then I think it's a lot more advanced to be like, well, maybe there's a point that, even though we talk every day, that's not enough. And I need to be talking to them twice a day. And I'm an ungrateful daughter. And
right. And that seems to me very clear as we wrap up our conversation, to be like, red light, yellow light, green light, in terms of, like, red light, I can see you're super frustrated. Yellow light, okay, there are two sides to this, two points of view. Like, let's look at the whole picture. And green light is like, let's have a philosophical conversation about how no one is fully good or bad and that people contain multitudes.
Right. And that's pretty advanced. But that you, yeah, this is a good place to start, though. You will fight less. Conflicts will be shorter and more productive when you don't need to have a winner.
I'm still working on this one, Amy. I'm going to say solved it, but man, this is my Achilles heel. I have trouble. We're both like Irish grudge ladies. Like, I have trouble being walking away and not being like, coming back in and being like, one more thing, though.
This is my motivation. I found a quote for this. It was like, well, this is perfect motivation for me because I love to be smart. You know, I love to learn things and be smart. F. Scott Fitzgerald, he said, the test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time. So if you do that, you're really smart, F. Scott Fitzgerald said. So that's enough for me. I'll let you know how it goes when I get there.
We'll link to the poem Good Bones by Maggie Smith. And it is this beautiful poem that sums this up. And it's about looking at it like any real, I'm selling the world to my kids, like any good realtor looking at a real crappy place and saying, you could make this place beautiful. And it's like, you know, it's a terrible place, but you're just, it's the opposing points of view.
Thank you to everybody who has checked where they're listening right now in their podcast apps to make sure you're still following and subscribing the show. Apple Podcast did this big update and they changed and turned off a lot of auto updates. So even if you subscribed at some point in the past, if you haven't followed our show recently from wherever you listen, it might be turned off and it would really help us if you turn it back on.
Only one thing is true. We are getting hosed by the new podcast updates, and you need to go back and resubscribe to the show because otherwise you're not getting it. We're following off your feeds. Tell your friends, hey, have you listened to What Fresh Hell lately? I used to love that show. What happened? Well, your phone stopped serving it to you. That's what happened. So go back, tell a friend, like, follow, subscribe, and then you can always find us in your feed.
Yeah, and there will be
episodes and episodes to come. Thanks for listening, friends. And with that, we will talk to you next time.
So long.
Hey there. I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.